SOS Radio Podcast.
Life issues, artist interviews, and faith.
Downloading now.
We're talking to Mark Welchel today on SOS Radio, and he's a marriage and family therapist and serves as director of counseling at the Renewing Life Center in Las Vegas. Thanks for joining us today, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing great, Scott. It's great to be here with you.
So turning on the news, seeing all the suicide rates increasing, it's like hard to see how depression is cutting through. Sometimes we wonder, like, are the rates really as high as they sound, or do we just hear about it a whole lot more through social media and everyone feeling like I need to have a voice and an opinion on every possible topic that's out there? How do you see this, Mark?
Yeah, I see it definitely is growing. You know, when you just think of suicide, there's a statistic that basically 2,600 Americans attempt to take their life every day, which is about two every minute. And what we know is that people who attempt to take their life, 90% of them are struggling with depression. Depression is certainly growing.
There's spiritual challenges that can lead to depression. There's chemical imbalances and things that lead to depression. Then there's just the emotions that I think can confuse us. Where do we even start to comprehend, like, what's going on? We just feel like, I'm not happy. My emotions are just out of whack. Am I depressed, or is this a spiritual challenge that I'm dealing with that I can't discern?
The thing that, to me, kind of marks this is depression as opposed to I'm having a rough day, really tends to be the length of time that it goes on. When you think about depression, for someone to be clinically depressed, they need to be experiencing what they're experiencing for at least 2 weeks. And it's pretty significant. It has significant effects on their relationships, in their work, pretty much every aspect of life.
And do you see it affecting men and women differently?
Tends to. There's a difference in how women experience depression, as well as how teens experience depression and how men experience depression. So there can certainly be differences. And literally every depression is different because every brain is different. So, you know, while there's common factors that you find in depression, there's certainly a lot of differences as well.
So being a Christ follower and struggling with depression, it can have a detrimental effect on your walk with God, because a lot of times you feel like, oh, I'm supposed to be content, or I'm supposed to have joy, but then you don't see God in your surroundings sometimes. You know, when people are struggling with depression, you know, you're trying to reframe your mindset, you know, I must not be a good enough Christian then. How do you deal with that?
Right, yeah, and I think that is fairly prevalent. You know, one of the symptoms of depression is excessive or inappropriate guilt. With the clients that I work with that are Christ followers, that's one of the things that's fairly pronounced for them. They have thoughts like, well, you know, the joy of the Lord should be my strength. And so there must be something wrong with my walk with God. But certainly what I found is that there's people who are far from God who suffer from depression and people who are very close to God who are suffering from depression.
We're talking to Mark Welchel from the Renewing Life Center in Las Vegas. When we feel depressed or we just don't feel joy, there's this guilt element of things on there. And sometimes we misinterpret that as shame. Sometimes we take guilt to a whole deeper level than maybe there was a consequence that would cause guilt. How do we discern when guilt is healthy and when guilt is not healthy that we're feeling?
To me, it's the long-standing feeling that I'm not good, that I am fundamentally flawed, bad, and it's a constant, as opposed to, say, the Spirit convicting us as a result of something that we know we've stepped outside of God's will. And so, to me, conviction, that type of guilt, is something that comes for a short period of time, and usually based on something that has happened. But in depression, it's just this long-standing, I'm not good enough, I don't measure up.
So when we're feeling like I don't stack up, I don't stand up, that's different than just saying, hey, I'm a sinner and I recognize there's some consequences.
Absolutely.
Because I've been making a series of bad decisions, or the people around me have, and I'm getting some collateral damage that's hitting me. But
right,
you point right through that.
Absolutely. All of us are flawed. All of us have things that are wrong. But people who suffer from depression, generally, the prevailing thought that they have about themselves, their life, is that I'm just not good enough. I don't like me. I don't think anybody else likes me. I don't think God likes me. It's more all-encompassing.
We're talking about how we balance our emotions and how we deal with depression and how we deal with guilt today with Mark Welchel. He works with the Renewing Life Center in Las Vegas, and he's a licensed family and marriage counselor. You know, when we deal with depression, we recognize we have feelings. And sometimes our feelings are sad. Sometimes our feeling is disappointment. And a lot of times it has to do with the length of how long we feel that. But how do we discern where this is a spiritual problem versus this might be a chemical thing?
God made us as emotional people, and so our emotions, we welcome them, whether they're on the positive end of the spectrum or what we would think of on the negative end of the spectrum. Our emotions are a part of what makes us human. And spiritually, we're going to have emotions that make us feel close to God, close to other people, happy, but also emotions that will make us sad. I think one of the differences for people with depression and their emotions is they tend to add a lot of content to their emotions. So for example, let's say they say, I feel sad, which is not unusual for somebody with depression. They don't just say, I feel sad, they start to add content. Well, I'm always sad, and my life is sad, and I will never change. And so instead of just accepting, hey, yeah, today I'm not feeling great, they add so much to it that pretty much is a domino effect. It cycles them downward. And that's a pretty strong pattern of people who are depressed.
Now, Mark, when you're talking with people that are really struggling with clinical depression, do you find that a lot of times people are taking things on as their identity is depression?
Yes. And that's one of the things that I work with my clients who are struggling with depression is I honestly don't want them to say, I am depressed. I would much rather them say, lately, I am struggling with a season of depression. Depression doesn't define who we are. You know, we're a child of God, and so we don't want to define ourselves as I am depressed. More so, looking at it as a season and something that I am working through, as opposed to who I am.
Identity has morphed into something that's so interesting today because there's so many layers where I identify in my work, or I identify in my sexuality, or I identify with my family background or my ethnicity, or I identify with a disability, or I identify with an illness. It's like, how do we break that cycle so we really can own the fact that we identify in Christ while still dealing with some of the real things that are in front of us?
Well, Scott, I would say that every human being has at their core a desire to belong. And so we reach out to things for which we feel belonging. But ultimately, as a Christ follower, I believe our number one identity is that we're a child of God. We're made in His image. He loves us. And so that's where we want to identify most as a follower of Christ. But again, we will start to also look at, I'm a baseball player, or I like doing this. And there, it's community. We're bringing community into our life by the way that we identify. And a lot of times that encourages us, it supports us. I'm a huge fan of like Celebrate Recovery, that is bringing people together who have similar things that they may be struggling with. And it strengthens them. It gives them community in their life that just helps them.
We're talking to Mark Welchel from Renewing Life Center on SWS Radio today, and he's a licensed family and marriage therapist. Mark, when we start to realize that our identity is in something other than Jesus first, what do you suggest we do to sort of reset that and understand that?
The Apostle Paul in Romans 12 talks about renewing our mind. And I think that is a daily practice. We first off, every day, we're taking the time to remind ourselves with God who we are. And what are the essential truths of who He has made us to be? So we start there, and then we allow that to be the center part of who we are as we go out into life and interact as that employee. So the center of us is that of a Christ follower, but it is expressed through all these other communities that we're a part of.
Now, Mark, what have you learned about who Jesus says we are?
When I think about who Jesus says we are, to me, there are core truths that are very important. In my journal in the morning, I don't read these every day, but I have core truths for myself, for my life, that I'm created by God, that God loves me, that I'm His child, that I'm forgiven, that He's going to meet our needs, that He's going to take whatever happens today and use it for His kingdom and use it for good. whether or not it was absolutely good, he uses even the things that are mistakes. And so I just remind myself of these truths. I encourage other people to do the same. And that goes back to our core identity.
We're talking about renewing our mind with Mark Welchel today at SWS Radio, and he's a licensed marriage and family therapist. And when we dig into really renewing our mind and understanding what God truly thinks about us and says about us and what he feels about us, we go back to this line in the Bible where Paul says, we could take every thought captive and we put it under the authority of Jesus. And I think a lot of times when we're dealing with a lot of sadness and we're dealing with a lot of grief and a lot of worry, we don't even take it as reality that we could take those thoughts captive. It's like, oh, things come into my head, I can't do anything about that. Or I'm under attack, this is happening. If we don't actually take authority and believe that we could take authority, we're kind of dead in the water at the start, right?
Right. And I think that's such a powerful verse from 2 Corinthians, that we take every thought captive, we make it obedient to Christ. That is a powerful tool that we have, that we have thoughts, but those thoughts, one, aren't always true, and they don't have to control us. That we can examine our thoughts, we can submit our thoughts to the truth of God, and we could take thoughts captive. For me, when I'm working with somebody who's depressed, one of the things that is pretty characteristic of somebody struggling with depression is they have automatic negative thoughts that ruminate in their mind, like, I'm no good, or nothing it will ever work, I'm a disappointment to people. And they're very automatic, and they happen again and again and again. You know, if you think that we may have, say, I think I've heard about 70,000 thoughts a day, research would also say that most of those thoughts are the same thoughts we had yesterday. And so if we're ruminating in negative automatic thoughts, it just builds that depression or negative slide stronger and stronger.
We're talking to Mark Welchel today at SWS Radio. And as you've done graduate studies and you've studied the Bible as well, you've studied marriage and depression and conflict and temptation and all these things that kind of help us go sideways and tempt us and push us into wrong perspective. What have you learned about how Paul explained taking authority over our thoughts?
I think it is active. It is something that we have to be conscious of, purposeful about, so that when thoughts are coming into our mind that are untrue or negative, that we take captive those thoughts, and we have to be purposeful about it. Now, there's true thoughts that are negative. And I talk with clients often about the idea that if you think of a road and everything to the left side of that road is that which is negative, everything on the right side of the road is that which is positive, both always exist. There's never a time that it's all bad. Yet people who are depressed often think everything is bad. But there's also never a time that everything is good. And so in terms of where do we want to direct our thoughts, you know, the Apostle Paul in Philippians 4 verse 8 says, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things. And so he's telling us, this is a choice. We can choose to think about the things that are positive. And I often will tell my clients, and he wrote that while he was chained up in prison.
Yeah, true. And he goes on to write a whole book about joy while he's chained to a Roman guard.
Right.
Think about perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so it's a choice. It's a choice to focus our thoughts towards that which is good. And all of the research would say, that helps us so much in terms of living a healthy emotional life.
Talking to Mark Welchel, he's director of counseling for Renewing Life Center in Las Vegas. And it's one thing to be a person who's struggling with depression. It's another thing to be outside of someone who's struggling with depression, a husband, a wife, your kids, a close friend, and you desperately want to help, but you don't even know where to start. You know, they come from this place where they just feel like they don't have any happiness in their life. Everything's terrible. They feel worthless and hopeless. Where do we start in helping to someone so we can speak life into them?
So as a family member or somebody who loves somebody who's going through depression, I want to first off just acknowledge it's hard. It is hard for us to be in relationship with somebody who is struggling with depression. And so when you think, well, what would help? What can I do that will help my loved one, help my friend? I think, again, we need to offer support. We need to offer encouragement in a gentle way. I think it's also important to be careful not to shame them for what they're feeling. And to make it sound almost too easy, like, well, just buck up, give easy answers. I almost think of like Job's friends. The best thing they did was just be quiet and sit with him and care about him. And I think that's for us. We just need to be with, to show care. I think there's practical things that we could do if it's a friend. I think offering, hey, let me come over. Let me just do some of the things that have been overwhelming you. Let me come in, wash your dishes, clean your house. Let me take you to that doctor appointment. So there's practical ways, I think, that we can come alongside someone. Certainly we can pray for them, pray with them. I would say also to be gently persistent when you're offering to take them for coffee and they keep turning you down. Because people with depression tend to, they don't like themselves, and so they don't want to inflict themselves on somebody else. And so they tend to push away. Be patient, be persistent, and keep saying, no, I'm coming. We're going to do lunch. We're going to spend some time. It's so helpful for people who are depressed to have a person in their life and to spend some time, even if at the moment it's not very pleasurable to them.
Talking to Mark Welchel from Renewing Life Center on SWS Radio, and he's a licensed marriage and family therapist. Mark, what do you think most Americans misunderstand about clinical depression?
Well, a lot of times I think people don't realize what clinical depression is. They think, oh, it's a bad day or a series of bad days, or they think of it as the opposite, a lifetime sentence where you are always going to be depressed. And generally, depression has a season, it's a cycle, and there's things that we can do and change that shorten that cycle and help us get back to health. But generally, when you think about depression, there's no medical test that will show somebody has depression, at least not one that's easily accessible to most people. And so it's pretty much diagnosed by doctors or counselors based on the symptoms. And there's essentially about 9 symptoms of depression, and you need to have 5 of those to be clinically depressed. So some of those would be, you know, I feel depressed most every day, or nothing much is bringing me pleasure. I'm having trouble with sleep. I'm having trouble with eating. I have no energy. Again, the guilt feelings that we have is another one of the symptoms. And even suicidal ideation is one of those. So it's deeper than a bad day, but it's also not something that is a lifetime sentence.
It's interesting in the modern world that we're in, because it seems like when you're struggling with depression, there seems to be a couple of different schools of thought. There's write a prescription, go on medication, or just work out the spiritual angle of this, or find a counselor to talk through. And it seems like a lot of these resources don't all come together on the front end. How do you discern that as someone who's worked in the mental health world for years and also studied the theological, spiritual side of all that? Because psychiatry usually is leading with a lot of medication, where you work more as a counselor, but you've also worked as a pastor. And so how do you see all that coming together?
I think, at least the type of work I do, I try to bring a biblical view and a clinical view into all the work that I do. And for the most part, the work that I'm doing with somebody who's depressed is working through the emotional, relational thoughts, what they're doing in their life that may be making the depression worse, trying to change those things for them so that they're going to see some progress. Medical doctor is going to approach it from a medical standpoint, and they'll prescribe an SSRI type of medication to try to help the natural serotonin that's in the brain to work a little bit better, to have the synapses a little bit easier. So they're going to approach it from that angle. And a pastor is going to come alongside from a spiritual standpoint, and probably also an emotional and relational standpoint as well, to try to help a person.
And where do you suggest we start if we're just feeling like, I'm not feeling happy in any areas of my life right now, and that's the place you're starting from? What do you suggest for those that are listening?
The number one thing that I really want people to know who are struggling with depression is that there's hope. There's hopefulness, and that there are things that they can do right now that is going to affect their life in a positive way in the weeks and months to come. Because often they're feeling like there's nothing I can do. Everything's dark. Everything's hopeless. Nothing can change. But that's not true. And so if they take that step and they reach out and they talk to someone, my hope is that they will start to find hopefulness and realize there's things they can do to make this better.
Thanks for downloading the SOS Radio podcast. If you enjoy the discussion and want to help the podcast grow, you can make a $10 donation through sosradio.net or inside the SOS Radio app. Thanks for your generosity. It helps us experiment with new things and keep the discussions fresh.